We're learning the last sedra of the book of Genesis of Bereshis, and the page is 90. Page 90.
90?
Yeah. So where are we in the story? We dealt with Joseph, not quite finished, because now he is entertaining his family in Egypt. As a result of the famine, they all came down to Egypt.
Right.
And numbering a total of 70 souls, including Joseph and his two sons. Although, as Rashi points out, the number of people mentioned by name is only 69, but the rabbis had a tradition that one little girl was born as they came through the walls of the town, whichever town it was in Egypt, that they were heading for. So in other words, when it's telling us there were only 69 people, 69 people set off from Canaan, from the land of Israel. And 70 people arrived, because Yocheved, the daughter of Levi, the Levi, was born Bein HaChomos, between the walls, as they came into the metropolis. So 70 souls came down to Egypt. The rabbis discuss how many of they became over the years, because we see in the next sedra, with the beginning of the book of Exodus, Shemais, that it says, Paru vayirbu vayishutu vayirbu b'maid ma'aid, six expressions of increasing and multiplying and being fruitful, and the rabbis say that they used to have sextuplets, and that was the rate at which they were reproducing, and they became a very numerous nation.
That's six.
In a very short period of time. Six, yes. Sextuplets. So, because there are six expressions of multiplication and fruit being fruitful, the rabbis learn out from there that it was six at a time. So, they very quickly became an immigration problem.
Six at a time was one every year for 6 years.
Now you get quite a bunch, don't you?
No, I'm just...
It's not only 6 years, is it? Anyway, let's keep to the point. So where we are in the story is that Jacob and his family have arrived in Egypt, and he arrived at the age of 130. We know that because it says so explicitly. When Pharaoh asked him his age, he said 130. And we know he lived 147 years, so he was there for 17 years. And this is how the sedra begins. Vayichi Yaakov be'eretz Mitzrayim sheva esrei shona. Yaakov lived in the land of Egypt for 17 years. Vayichi yemei Yaakov shnei chayov, and the days of Jacob, the years of his life, sheva shonim varboim umas shona, were 7 and 40 and 100 years. In Hebrew you get the numbers very often in reverse. Instead of saying 147, it says 7 and 40 and 100. Whichever way you say it, it's the same number, 1, 4, 7. So we do a very simple calculation and confirm that he was indeed there for 17 years. Which begs the question, why does the text have to say that? Yaakov lived in the land of Egypt 17 years, and he lived till 147. But we know already that he was 130 when he came down. So why tell us the obvious? He could have just said that he lived for 17 years, and we would have known that he died at 147. Or the other way around. So one of the commentaries points out that Jacob, as we know, had a special relationship with Joseph. Joseph was his favorite son, for good reason, as we discussed before.
I forgot what it was.
That Joseph had qualities which his brothers didn't have. To put it in a quick summary, rather than going over it again, because we did it on a previous occasion. explained it on...
Spirituality?
I think last week I explained it.
He had spirituality?
He had a deeper level of spirituality. They all had spirituality. But he had a deeper level of spirituality than they did. So, he especially loved Joseph. Another reason why he especially loved him was because he was the son of Jacob's favorite wife. Being?
Rachel.
Exactly. Rachel. Rachel. And why was she his favorite wife? Because she was the one he wanted to marry in the first place. She was the one that he met at the well. She was the one that was bringing the sheep.
I thought that was Rivka.
No, that was another well.
Oh, the camels.
That was Eliezer meeting Rivka at the well. But that was a different story because Eliezer was the Shatran. He wasn't going to marry Rivka. He was just looking for a bride for Yitzchak. But so that the rabbis actually comment about this, that our forefathers met by wells. Moses also met his wife by a well. And wells figure very prominently in the Chumash. So for example, Be'er Sheva is called Be'er Sheva because Be'er means a well.
I thought well is Meidam.
Is?
Meidam.
Mayan.
Yes, Mayan.
Mayan means a fountain, a spring. There's a difference between a well and a spring. A well is a static gathering of water below ground, and a spring is a moving body of water, usually in a small trickle at the beginning, and it gives rise to can give rise to a great river. So wells have figured very prominently. We know that Abram dug wells, Isaac dug wells, Beersheba is called the well of the seven. The seven referring either to seven sheep, which were offered up between Abram and Avimelech when they made a pact, or it could mean Shavua, which means an oath. But nevertheless, the word Be'er stands with the same meaning as a well. And in particular, Isaac dug wells. Jacob met his wife by a well. Rivka met her shatchan by a well. Moses got his shidduch by a well. And the answer to that is well, well, well.
We should go to a well.
And everything should go well. As you rightly say. So, the Balaturim, one of the commentaries over here, points out that the word Vayechi is made up of four letters. Do you know numerical values of letters?
No.
Vav is 6. Yud is 10. That makes 16. Ches is 8, making 24. And Yud is 10, makes 34. 34 is 2 times 17. What are the 2 times 17? The first 17 is the age that Joseph was when he left his father. When his father sent him to find out how his brothers were doing whilst they were out pasturing their sheep, and then they kidnapped him and sold him down to Egypt, it says over there, in the Sedra Vayeshev, he was 17 years old. That means that Yaakov lived with his son Joseph for the first 17 years of Joseph's life. Then there was a gap, a big gap of 22 years, during which Joseph was lost to him. He didn't know where he was. He thought he was even dead, because that's the story the brothers came back with. And then they are reunited. And here we see that after they're reunited, they're together for another 17 years. So the 34, which is hinted at the beginning of the Sedra, with the word Vayechi, says the Balaturim is hinting to these 34 years, two lots of 17, which Yaakov lived with his son Joseph, his favorite son. And so Vayechi, the word Vayechi means he lived. That means he really lived. Of course, everyone lives until they die. So why does it say he lived for 17 years? In Egypt, he lived for 147 years. The answer is, he really lived. What you really call living, for 34 years. When he was with Joseph, then he felt he was alive. When he was without Joseph, he felt his life wasn't worth living. So that is the Bala Turim. Now the Rebbe also points out something about this. He says, Vayichi Yaakov, Be'eretz Mitzrayim 17 shana, Yaakov lived in the land of Egypt for 17 years. So it's telling us he really lived. That's what you call living. But not necessarily just because of Joseph. How can we say that Jacob was more alive in Egypt, which is a very negative place, compared to the land of Canaan? Well, the land of Canaan was a pretty negative place as well. But at least he was at home in a religious, spiritual environment with his family, and was able to maintain his religious standards without too much difficulty and challenge. And now, when he comes down to Egypt, which is called Erbas Haaretz, which means it is the most corrupt and immoral place on earth, and now the Torah tells us that Jacob was fully alive. So the Rebbe poses this question. How can we say this? Surely, isn't it better to be in one's own enclave with the ghetto walls around and we're all safe and sound and no challenges from outside? The answer is no. Because God wanted that we should bring spirituality to the most remote places on earth. Not necessarily remote physically, although that's happening today as well with the Rebbe Shluchim, who are now pretty well in every country on earth. Yes, another well. Pretty well in every country on earth, probably except Antarctica. But we get to Antarctica through the internet, because there's a story told of an American scientist who was stationed in Antarctica for 6 months. And in the winter, in the southern hemisphere, it's dark for 6 months in Antarctica, and it's pretty cold as well, and they spend their time underground. And he was getting pretty miserable. A Jewish scientist, yeah, who was unaware of his heritage. And obviously the internet is a key lifesaver for them down there, where they can keep in contact with the world. And he was internet? Surfing. Yes, he was surfing the internet, and he notices something interesting, you know, on some search, or maybe it was Hanukkah or something, and he noticed something interesting that caught his fancy, a Lubavitch website, and he got onto it and got very interested in what he was reading. I think it was before Hanukkah, and he actually wrote off. He sent an email to request some Jewish literature and appurtenances that would enable him to participate in the festival. I think it was Hanukkah. So he, in the post, not long afterwards, he got there was a drop, a helicopter drop, however they do it, and he got these things sent by Lubavitch, Chabad.org, and as a result of this connection through the internet from Antarctica, whilst he was whiling away the darkness of the 6 month night, he became a Baal Tshuva. He resolved to learn more about Judaism when he gets back to America, and he did so, and he became a returnee.
He must have remembered his Jewishness, otherwise he wouldn't have gone on to...
He knew he was Jewish. But there are many Jews that know they're Jewish, but they don't act Jewish.
No. Is Lubavitch in China?
Yes, very much so.
Very bad name at the moment, isn't it?
It doesn't matter what the name of the country is and what kind of name it has, we've got to be there, because if there are Jews there, we have got to be there. The chief rabbi, Rabbi Jonathan Sachs, wrote a brilliant article. Lord, is he a Lord now, yeah? Lord Sachs. Rabbi Lord or Lord Rabbi,
but
whichever way.
And a sir.
Yeah. Wrote a brilliant article about the Rebbe some years ago.
Rabbi Sir Lord Sachs.
Okay, I'm sure he'll answer to that. So he wrote a brilliant article about Lubavitch, about the Rebbe, some years ago, in which he coined a brilliant phrase. He said, as Jews were hunted down in hate 60 years ago, so now the Rebbe is hunting Jews down in love. And I think it's a beautiful observation.
He must have said that when the Rebbe was alive.
I think he wrote it just after the Rebbe passed away. And that was the Rebbe. He was hunting Jews down with love. And not being satisfied until every single Jew in the world is connected with himself, his own Judaism. Because that is the true existence. And that is what the message is over here. God's intention for us, you'll come in a minute, but just let me finish the point before I lose it. God's intention is what's something called Dira B'Tachtonim. We are expected and charged with the task of making a dwelling place for God down in this lower world. But the word Tachtonim means the lowest of the low, meaning even in places which are totally bereft of spirituality, our job is to bring godliness over there too. That's the message of Hanukkah.
Maybe that's why I've dropped into the middle of Hackney.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Did you light your Hanukkah lights down there?
Yes.
So you brought godly light into deep Hackney. Deep and dark as Hackney.
And Leighton.
Pardon?
And Leighton.
And Leighton as well. And you've got no idea what you achieved. You absolutely have no idea. You've got no idea. We do not know the full power of the Hanukkah lights. In Hasidic teachings, it explains that they reach to the highest spiritual levels, even higher than the temple lights, than the menorah and the Beis Hamikdash. And the reason is the same message as we've got here about Jacob. Because Jacob is in Egypt, a lower place than the land of Canaan, and he brings godliness there, and he brought Torah there because he sent his son Judah to start a yeshiva down there, a Talmudical college, and he brought the light of God into this pagan, idol-worshipping, immoral, evil society. And he managed to achieve that. That is real Jewish living. When we achieve the aim that God sets us to the ultimate degree, then that is the real Jewish life. You were going to say, or have you forgotten it?
Did the rabbi go around to the bungalow? Rabbi, who's the one that lives in Southgate?
Oh, did he go round? I don't know. I'll check.
Bungalow?
My parents. The bungalow. Avenue Road.
I'll check.
The bungalow.
So, this is the beginning of the Sedra, Vayichi. And it's also the last Sedra of Bereishis, as we said before. And Rashi points out a very interesting thing, which is that there's no break between last week's Sedra and this week's Sedra. Look down the first paragraph. You can see a paragraph there. I'm not sure if there's a paragraph in the Torah over here. But anyway, you can see a paragraph. Now, paragraphs appear in the Torah, in the scroll. And these paragraphs are absolutely crucial. There's two kinds of paragraphs. There's an open paragraph and a closed paragraph. An open paragraph means, I'm trying to remember which way round it is now. An open paragraph is one way it starts on the next line. The next paragraph starts on the next line. And a closed paragraph is where the next paragraph starts on the same line. The one that is showing over there, I don't think it's a real paragraph. As in the Torah, turn to page 92. There you'll see paragraphs. The two kinds of paragraphs.
You have paragraphs.
Pardon?
In the Sefer Torah, you don't have paragraphs.
And you do, that's what I'm saying. You do. Oh. Two kinds of paragraphs.
Punctuation?
No punctuation.
Is that?
Only letters.
So that means
no letters, only letters, no vowels, and no musical cantillations.
I buy a Miss Cyprus citation, Blue Green Algae. I just thought I'd announce it.
Sorry again? All right, let's try and keep to the point. Okay, so if you look on page 92, you can see, got page 92?
Yes.
On the sort of beyond halfway down the page, can you see gaps in the line, like line
16, 17, 19, 18.
Oh, you got the numbers, the Hebrew numbers, yes?
No.
Oh, yes, verse, look across, or opposite verse 14, and you'll see a gap in the Hebrew.
Yeah.
And where the word don starts at the end of the line. Well, that's a closed paragraph. That's an example of a closed paragraph. So what Rashi points out is, going back to page 90, is that between last week's Sedra and this week's Sedra, there's no gap. Normally, between Sedras, there is a gap. And the rabbis point out that the word Vayechi, although they normally say it on the word Vayechi, the word, the beginning of the word is Vay. And Vay, in Hebrew, means woe. It's almost the same word.
Halavai.
Halavai is a different word. Halavai is means I wish it was so. But the word Vay on its own is means woe. Woe to me. Wow. As the Talmud says, if somebody loses something and they give up hope, the words they use are Vay lichisoron kis. Woe to the loss to my pocket. They lost their money and then they give up hope of ever getting it back again. So they use the word vi. And we use it in Yiddish as well, as in oive. But interestingly, they say vi. But I think that's in German as well. It comes from the Yiddish comes from the German, because vei in German means pain. So I think this is one of the words where the Hebrew has infiltrated the other languages. Like the word sack is the same in all the languages.
They knew that they knew that Father Christmas was on his way to converting when he went oi 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 instead of ho ho. You know that was fun. Where does it say?
Hang on. Two voices are gone. Yeah.
May you be well. No. May you be well. May you be happy. May you be free from suffering, and may you make progress.
I don't recognize the sequence. No. If I knew it, what it was in Hebrew, I could possibly identify.
I'm just wondering where it comes from. Anything sort of.
But when you put it in English, I can't think of a sequence like that.
But does it say anything in that sort of context?
Something similar in expression. Mm. Well, we're always asking for blessings for those things. And then in our prayers, we say them, not necessarily in that order, with that phraseology, but we ask for prosperity and so on, you know. So the sentiments are definitely there. Mm. But the actual quote, I'm not quite sure. I would have to see it in Hebrew in order to comment on it. Sorry, you were going to say, Maria.
Good.
You'd rather say, oivavoy. Yeah, it's all connected. It's all connected. So the question is whether the Yiddish is emulating.
I heard a lady in the Brenner Centre. I was reading it. She said, I'm in a gewalt today. I'm in a bit of a gewalt.
Gewalt.
She said, I'm in a gewalt today.
It's probably not the right use of it.
Oh.
The word gewalt is used in Yiddish.
Of gewalt.
You know, it's a cry of pain or cry for help.
Oh, no, gewalt.
In German, it actually means I think it means force. But whatever. Anyway, we're digressing a little bit. So Rashi points out that why is there no gap between this week's Seder and last? Because in other words, it's closed. There's a closure there. There's no gap. So he says because the eyes and ears, the heart, I think he says. The eyes and the hearts of the Jewish people were shut closed because of the passing of Jacob. And even the Egyptians were very upset when Jacob passed away, because he brought blessing to them. What two blessings he brought. One is that when he arrived, the famine years, which should have been how many years of famine?
Seven.
Very good. Yeah, 14 altogether. Seven of plenty and seven of famine. But Jacob arrived after 2 years. And when he arrived, because he was such a great tzaddik, the famine stopped. And they only had 2 years of famine. Really, it's very understandable, because the objective of the famine had been achieved. What was the objective of the famine? To get Jacob to come down to Egypt. Now that he came, God didn't need a famine anymore. The famine had done its job. So therefore, it makes sense that God allowed the famine to cease because Jacob had arrived in Egypt. A second blessing which the Egyptians got was the fact that Pharaoh, when he met Jacob blessed him. And the blessing manifested itself in that when Pharaoh used to go down to the Nile every day for his ablutions. And when he went down to the Nile, a miracle happened and the waters rose to meet him. Everyone saw this, and that gave extra kudos and power to Pharaoh. So Pharaoh was also very pleased about Jacob. And generally, everyone had blessing because Jacob was there in Egypt. So when he passed away, a kind of darkness fell, and that's why there's no gap between the two sedras.
Nothing to do with it ending. This week is the end, isn't it, of operation?
No, because it appears at the beginning of the sedra. Yes, thank you for pointing it out. That this week is a special sedra because it's the end of a book, which we mentioned already. But in shul, in the synagogue, we have a little, I won't even call it ceremony, it's probably too small to be called a ceremony, but an event, which is that the whole congregation says in a very loud voice, turn to page 94.
Why would they say that?
It didn't say turn to page 94.
Turn to page 94.
And the congregation still says in a very loud voice,
turn to page 94.
Will you be saying that in front of us?
Yes, can you see the big words at the bottom of the page? Chazak, the big word? That spells Chazak. It's not the full phrase. The phrase that they shout out is Chazak, Chazak, Venis Chazak. And it's from the word Chazak meaning strong. It's Chazak, be strong. Chazak, be strong. Venis Chazak, and let's be strong.
Very powerful.
It's very powerful, yes. And the reason for it is because when the power of the Jewish people comes from Torah.
They say it a lot in Israel, be strong, especially in times, God forbid, of
Chazak ve'ematz.
They say it a lot there.
Good. It's a blessing. When you say it to another person, the Sfaradim wish each other Chazak u'baruch, be strong and blessed. After they've had an aliyah to the Torah, after they've had been called up to their aliyah. But the reason why we say it at the end of a book is because the reading a book of the Torah is an achievement. We have under our belt the fact that we have completed a book of the Torah. And the Torah is our life and strength. As we say in our evening services, Ki hein chayenu ve'arech yameinu. The Torah is our life and the length of our days. So we see that Torah is the source of our strength. So when we've completed the book of the Torah, we are able to bless ourselves that we should be strong, and let us be strong. Thank you for pointing that out. I'll just add that there's a custom that the wardens in the synagogue pay for a kiddush this week, the end of the books.
So it's worth going to school.
I'm not sure they do it in Brent House Road, but in any case you have a kiddush in Brent House Road. But the question is, who pays for it?
Linda Garden was 93 2 weeks ago.
Who?
Lena.
Oh yeah? Really? Wonderful. She should have many good, long, happy, healthy years till 120.
The one I said once, you remind me of the Queen. very elderly with a hat.
Oh, at Brent House, yeah.
She said, oh, do me a favour. Very modest. The one that Beth was very friendly. Mm. That's a good
idea. Now, in this Sedra, we have the blessings of Jacob. So we're going to jump ahead a little. We've only got a couple of minutes left. So we're going to jump ahead to page 91.
Well, 94, yeah.
Well, go back. I was taking you to the end of the Sedra so you could see the word Chazak.
Oh. So everybody shouts that at the end of the Sedra at Shul.
They shout out Chazak, and it's Chazak.
There's a way of teaching to last night. I was at Shane DeBill, I haven't been for a long time. It's very different. Wonder why that is. She goes through raw.
There's no accounting for style.
She always goes off on tangents.
And she doesn't allow talking in them. She asks for questions at the end.
Very good. There's many different styles. So, look at verse 1 of chapter 49. Vayikra Yaakov el Bonov. Jacob called to his sons. Vayoma, and he said, Hey Osvu Vagidulochem, Esa She Yikra Esem Bachasayomim. Gather together, and I will tell you that which is going to happen to you at the end of days. Now Rashi points out that he was prepared to divulge to them, that's a sign that we've reached 9:30, to divulge to them when Mashiach is coming. That's what he was prepared to do.
I learned last night one of the signs of Mashiach's coming. Karen, she came to the shul last night, to Susa, and we left all the way home because it was raining, and we saw a fox. I said, oh no, I'm afraid. She said, when you see a fox, it's a sign that Mashiach's coming. I didn't know that.
I think she's possibly alluding to a story in the Talmud at the end of the tractate Ta'anit, which deals with fasts, where it tells a story of how Rabbi Akiva and his friends were walking near the temple, the destroyed temple, and they saw a fox go run out of the ruins. And it says that they, his colleagues, cried, and he laughed. So they said to him, Akiva, why are you laughing? And he said to them, why are you crying? So they said, we're crying because a fox is running through the ruins. That's surely, the ultimate in destruction. He said, that's the reason why I'm laughing. Because it says that in the prophets, it says this will happen. So he said, that gives us the confidence that the prophecy of destruction has happened. It means also the prophecy of rebuilding is going to happen. So he laughed because he saw in it a confirmation of a prophecy. And that means the other prophecies are going to be confirmed too. So he saw the positive. So Jacob gathered his sons around and he tells them, I'm going to tell you when Mashiach is going to come. But Rashi points out that he didn't, because it goes on to talk of other things. He says, gather together and listen, children of Jacob, and listen to Israel your father. And then he goes on to bless them. What happened? So Rashi points out that God withheld from him the facts of when Mashiach would come. For a very simple reason. Because it was going to be a long time hence. From that time. Not long from now, but long from then. And when we hear something is going to happen, something good's going to happen, but a very long time hence, there's a feeling of despair. Is it going to take so long before we get out of this prison? Says the man in prison when he finds out he's got 25 years to go. When we know something's far ahead, despair can set in. So God withheld from him these facts, and he sort of forgot it. He had a senior moment, what they call. And he never recovered to tell them, because subsequent to this he passed away. So the Rebbe talks about this and he says, why is it that the Talmud says that we should not try and anticipate when Mashiach is going to come? And the concept of defining a time when Mashiach will come is called in Hebrew a ketz, which ketz means an end. It's saying, the end of the era is going to be in the year 2009. Halavai, we've only got one day to go. Yeah? So...
He won't be circumcised, he'll be vegetarian, and he'll do lots of yoga and meditation.
Everyone has their own version, right? So,
and he'll
the Rebbe asks, the Talmud says,
he'll take all the greatest knowledge and learning and wisdom from all the different faiths and practices, none of which will conflict with the Torah.
As I say, you have your own idea. I advise you to consult Jewish sources as to what Mashiach will do, which don't quite coincide with what you just said. If you read Maimonides in graphic detail describes what Mashiach is going to do and what he's going to be like and what his achievements are in learning and so on. So it's pretty explicit over there, and it's worth consulting that before forming one's own opinion.
So back next week.
I guess. I'm only guessing. I don't know for sure. So, the Rebbe poses the question, why is it that when the Talmud says that those who try and predict when Mashiach is coming, the Talmud has a disparaging expression about those people. And yet we find, asks the Rebbe, that many, many sages over the years did predict when Mashiach is going to come. How could they depart from what the Talmud is saying?
What's this? The end of 2009 is the end of...
No, I said halavai. That means I wish it were so.
You said that the end of 2009...
Is tomorrow.
Is the end of what?
The year.
I know.
I said Mashiach should come before the end of 2009. Halavai. I wish it were so. Because there's only one day to go.
Okay.
So the Rebbe's answer to this question is, why is it the sages who lived in more recent times predicted when Mashiach is going to come? It's because we are near Mashiach. When it was the time of Jacob, and he knew that Mashiach is going to be a long, long way away, then it was not a good idea to reveal when Mashiach comes. And similarly in the time of the Talmud, which was written about 1700 years ago, then Mashiach was still far away. And therefore, the rabbis of the Talmud were disparaging about people who try and predict, because it would cause dismay. But said the Rebbe, now we're living very close to the time of Mashiach, and therefore it wouldn't cause dismay. On the contrary, it makes us feel more confident that he's actually coming, and so it should be B'karayv B'yameinu, very soon in our days.